5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thank you for joining us on another edition of Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce. Rob and Chris with me. We'll talk about Elimination Chamber happening probably as you're listening to this Saturday morning in Jeddah. I don't know what it's like, the seventh or eighth show that they've done. Second one that they've done since the pandemic. So we're finally back to these feeling like a big things. I guess the thing I want to ask before we even get into anything else, and we'll circle back to Elimination Chamber before we go back to 2006, because I believe we're talking pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Should we get used to not having a domestic pay-per-view in between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania? Because it feels like, you know, what's the point of having a domestic pay-per-view in between?
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like that's what's going to happen here, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad way to really do it at all. And, you know, it cuts down on, you used to have one pay-per-view between the Rumble and Mania. They used to have two for a while, and that was annoying.
That was worse.
Yeah.
It made more sense, like, now. When mm-hmm. we were watching in 2006, if you had a Raw pay-per-view, a SmackDown pay-per-view, it was back then, it was just a SmackDown pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It would have made sense then, but still, like, the SmackDown pay-per-view was cheap because you weren't getting the Raw show, and you kind of were tipped off to Raw being the focal point, the main event of WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, okay, you've done the No Way Outs or the Elimination Chamber. I think mm-hmm. it's been the solid standard February show for a while now. And it matters because of the Elimination Chamber, but not necessarily that they're really truly building towards WrestleMania in a way. So this is something that, you know, we can knock out the Jeddah shows. It's a way to get the superstars somewhere where it's warm in February, because no one wants to be cold as shit in Hershey. Let me stop because they're going to be in Hershey on Friday, actually. Yeah, nobody wants to be like New Hampshire in fucking in February. So I like it not having anything in March. And now that I mention it, I guess we should bring it up that I heard a little bird say that there's a return of Saturday Night's Main Event happening.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah, they're apparently, according to the article, they're going to be doing it for house shows at the end of April. I believe I saw one was going to be in Huntsville, Alabama, and the other in Lakeland, Florida.
Yeah, I mean,
okay, so it's a house show thing. It's not a
they're branding it as a live event or whatever. But it's, you know, it's one of their,
yeah. I don't know if they're going to like do something to stand out with it, or if it's going to be like when they did Starrcade.
Probably
or...
just like when they did Starrcade. Probably like when they've done when they did the Garden Show a couple years back. I won't mind it. Or when they did Smackville.
Yeah.
Nashville that one time.
That's right.
That's fine with me.
No, I mean, I'll be upset that it's not like the original, but
they're going to probably do the intro.
Yeah.
They're going to do all that stuff, but I don't really mind this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would matter a little bit more if it was on NBC or Fox, but it's more content for Peacock and the network and more opportunity for wrestling, I guess. Speaking of more opportunity for wrestling, I guess they finally did away with 205 Live. I've been like it made no sense once you started adding in more motherfuckers who are not 205 and under, and now we're adding in a lot of ladies, and we're just like, yo, it's kind of not cool to be talking about the ladies, and it's 205 live. Keaton Lyons, it's definitely not 205. So they changed the name to Level Up. I like that. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's not bad. You know, I don't know how much of it I'm gonna watch, but you know, it's a good name, and they have some intriguing stuff. I know Kushida's on there this week, and they added a new person to Diamond Mine.
Yeah,
they're gonna, I guess, further some stuff from NXT TV on the show. So that's cool.
That's probably gonna be one of the tag teams in the women's wrestling tough too.
Yeah,
if I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued and fascinated to see how it plays out.
Yeah, gets kicked off, I believe, this upcoming Tuesday, correct?
Women's Dusty Cup. It's the Friday that we're recording right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, right. That's right. It is on Level Up.
Yeah, it's just in 205's time slot now.
Right. I forgot that's happening it's starting on Level Up, and then it'll obviously transition to this upcoming Tuesday. So it's kicking off right after the Men's Dusty Cup, which let's circle back and talk about Vengeance Day. It's actually a really good match. I really enjoy Creed Brothers and MSK. I think that should, if not be MSK's call up, they should be on the road to it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting ready to do the show in Dallas the morning of night one of WrestleMania, allegedly. If that's their last show in NXT, perfect, fine, cool. It's time for them to go up. Creed Brothers got some. And I'm really intrigued by what the Creed Brothers got. And shout out to Malcolm Bivens, because he got the ultimate picture, man. He got the ultimate image. It's him, the Creed Brothers, Shawn Michaels, the Dusty Cup trophy, and a bottle of Hennessy. As an excellent picture, my guy, that will last a lifetime. And shout out to you, and shout out to the Creed Brothers. But yeah, Creed Brothers got some.
Yeah, no, they're great. I was actually really impressed with that match. I think it could have been a little longer even, but, you know, I get it. I'm really high on those guys. I think they should probably win the tag titles. And, I agree with MSK. They should probably be on the road to heading up.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you guys pretty much just echoed everything that rang true there.
What'd you guys think about the main event?
It was good.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, you know, it was always going to be kind of difficult because, you know, Ziggler's next for Braun. Like, so it's like, you know, Sandoz wasn't going to beat him. But I think they did a good job with it. And I think, you know, we talk about this a lot too. They're another group that's ready to go up. And I don't see really what there is for them to do after this.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pinpoint, especially in NXT. It's kind of hard to pinpoint, you know, what they can do. I think if you move into the main roster and you start them off on Raw, you know, you easily have them come in with Ray and Dominic, and maybe that's how we get to Dominic turning Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Suddenly you have something there, because Dominic can be, yeah, I mean, I call him your IC. Both him and Escobar are going to be your IC.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those two are going to, I mean, not now. You know, maybe if Dominic gets some grooming because he is really green, maybe at one point he can get there. Maybe Escobar, if they put him in the right situation. If they call him up now and they do that, it wouldn't work. But I think you have a nice genesis for something there.
Yeah.
With that. Please don't get all Ryan Satin on me with the... They're putting them all together. Please, no, I'm not trying to do that. I just think it'd be really cool. But it'd also be a way to just, like, you know, let Ray go and do whatever. Like, this is he's got the 23 cover or 2022 cover, excuse me. The days are long in the COVID era. He's got the 22 cover. And I know a couple years back when he returned, I want to say it was 2019, WWE 19. Where he had the special edition, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the special edition. I don't know if this kind of feels like it's the beginning of the end, the true beginning of the end for Rey Mysterio as an in-ring performer.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, we've seen the smaller guys kind of last longer, but he is 45 or around there.
Than that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit older. I mean, Like, he's a guy who can still go, but like, at some point he might just not want to anymore because he's been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah, he'll be 50 in a couple years. He's 47.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I mean, he's been on just American television regularly for 25 years, so that doesn't even account for the, you know, 6 or 7 years before he got there.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So, it's crazy, you know, the 30-some years in wrestling, the man had so much mileage, but, you know, we truly may be starting to see the end of Ray, and, you know, he'll obviously have a focal match on the WrestleMania card. He can't not being on the cover of the damn video game. It looks so exciting, man. I can't wait to play GM mode. But yeah, let's continue on. Bron Breakker won the title match. Mandy did not have the match, but the women's tag titles are on the line. Toxic Attraction, Special Attraction in my heart. They retained. There was one other match I'm just completely forgetting.
The Pete Dunne and Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's transition to AEW, because there's two major things within that promotion that we need to discuss. One being the departure of Cody Rhodes, and the other just being the overall staleness of the product. But let's start with Cody. Something about this still feels like work. Am I wrong with that?
I mean, I guess, like, from a perspective that I'm not going to believe it until he actually shows up. I think that's just the best way to handle it. But it kind of feels like it's going to happen. Like, I thought it was a work for a while, but, like, as of this week when they started issuing the statements and all that, it kind of felt like, you know, there's probably something to it. Like, I don't know. I didn't ever think he was going to be in the Royal Rumble or whatever. But, you know, it definitely has ramped up this week.
You can't pull off, I don't think you can pull off a work like that anymore. You probably could, like, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, when the internet was still like what it was. But I think at this point, he has to, he pretty much has to go to WWE. If he goes back there, I mean, the slight chance of it just feels like just was a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like he's bound for them. I think that makes things particularly interesting. But yeah, I mean, it seems like a surreal situation, even though I think among the people who were deemed executive vice presidents of AEW, he was the most likely to head back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Or head there in general, I guess. I mean, I know Omega was probably close to going there in the winter of 2018, perhaps. But
yeah.
That obviously never happened. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like 6 years after he left, he wanted to be a bigger deal, and congrats to him, he is.
Yeah.
He's no doubt coming back. If he does, he's coming back and he's going to be in a big better spot than he was then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's 1,000% clear. I, for some strange fucking reason, I decided to go look up the card for the Elimination Chamber back in 20, actually no, it wasn't Elimination Chamber, sorry, the Survivor Series in 2015, because I don't think I've seen that show since it happened, when they had the championship tournament, Roman Reigns beat Dean Ambrose, Sheamus came out. Do you remember Sheamus was in a tag match, or actually no, this is before that, on the pre-show actually. There was the Elimination Chamber. They did two Elimination Chamber matches. One was on the card. It was Sheamus, King Barrett, and New Day against like primetime players and some bullshit. And on the pre-show match, there was The Miz and there was Stardust on the same team. And that was maybe like 8-9 months or so before Cody left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So right there. You know, he's no longer doing the Stardust shit. He's no longer on a pre-show. You can expect him to be, at worst, a mid-card champion. He's there. But I think that the thing that I give Cody the most credit, and I think Vince will end up giving the most credit, is, you know, he bet on himself. And he said, like, yo, my position right now is not good. I'm not feeling it. I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, do my own thing. Whether it was New Japan, Impact, ROH, ensure at some point, you know, he's getting over on the family name. But then to start AEW, and not just start AEW, but like literally double down. Hey, we can do a show, sell 20,000 tickets, and it will be great. And he did that. Then to start the promotion, then to get the promotion up and going, getting it viable, making it viable, getting the TV deal to a point of sustained success where like, yo, I can go and I can, you know, leave this. I think that right there signals that Cody Rhodes, if he does choose to go to WWE, of course, there's always going to be the folks who, you know, Vince is going to do XYZ to Cody because Cody went and did this on his own and left the company and became a star on his own. He's not a Vince creation and whatever. He's going to come back and be in a great spot right off the rip because I think Vince respects that. And Vince understands that this business was stale for so long, so incredibly long. And we can be the top guy, but if we don't have competition, viable competition pushing us and giving us a reason to go out here and even make an effort, which they're not right now, but that's beside the point, then this business can't survive. It'll be just be WWE. There is no professional wrestling. Now there's professional wrestling because of Cody Rhodes. I think Vince will respect that aspect of it and will put Cody in a positive position. As far as go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like, it's kind of a mix of everything you said. Plus, they're allegedly paying him a lot of money. So they're going to, you know, want a strong return on that and, you know, not bury him or whatever. But also, you know, he's the first AEW guy to jump. You know, we've had the people jump in the other direction, but he's the first AEW one to jump. And, you know, I think they're in a position where.
I suspect Cora Jade.
Well, you know. But I think they're in a position where they have to feature him. They have to treat him well because, you know, this situation is going to come up again and again the next couple of years where people are going to be able to jump over. And, you know, they want to be sure that, you know, hey, if they did, you know, not book Cody, right, they'd be like, oh, you know, if they did this to Cody, imagine what they're going to do to me. So, yeah, I think it's important to really put him in a prime position. And I think they're going to, at least through WrestleMania, assuming he comes in this week, after WrestleMania could be anyone's guess, but you know, take
does
it as it comes.
Does it benefit them to wait until after WrestleMania? I feel like we had a conversation not too long ago about the post WrestleMania debut.
No, I think
they need to do this ASAP.
I think it benefits them to put him on Raw to lead off Monday if he's under contract already. I mean, you know, there's no use waiting. It's you got to strike while the iron's hot here.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited about it because again, if it all works out and everything, it's going to be a new guy at the top of the card, which we haven't had in a long time. So it's exciting. Science. Yeah.
I mean, since it's someone who immediately came in and shot up to the top of the card, I mean, it took Styles a couple months, but he was working with the likes of Jericho. He was working with the likes of Owens and New Day and whatnot and doing those types of things with those people in his first few months there. So yeah, it's been a while since somebody has literally, you know, not come through NXT or whatever, but literally just jumped ship and landed like that.
So it's exciting.
It is. It is legitimately exciting.
Yeah. A couple notes one note about AEW before we talk about the ratings. They're returning to Long Island. That's going to be a huge show. Live Dynamite Rampage taping Wednesday, May 11th. They're also holding opening round matches of what's being called the Owen Hart Foundation Men's and Women's Tournament. So what is that?
So yeah, they're partnering with like Owen. They got his likeness and they're going to do action figures, I guess, for the video game. And, you know, him and it's through Martha. So like, you know, she's working with them. And I guess it's just kind of going to be like a King of the Ring sort of thing because they've been talking about it for a long time. But now, since we have like an actual start date for it, it seems like it's going to wrap up at Double or Nothing. So it's just going to be like a 3-week tournament or whatever. So kind of like their version of King of the Ring, I suppose.
And they've announced Double or Nothing for Memorial Day weekend in Vegas.
They haven't officially, but okay. I mean, I imagine that's pretty set in stone.
That's an interesting. I'm gonna call it summer because May is summer in Vegas. Yeah. It's gonna be an interesting summer in Las Vegas.
Oh
with
yeah,
that and SummerSlam, or SummerSlam, Money in the Bank, 4th of July weekend. It's gonna be very interesting.
Money in the Bank and UFC on the same night.
That's going to be the same night as UFC's regular July pay-per-view?
Yep.
Holy shit.
And it's 4th of July weekend, so.
Holy shit. That is, I hope it's during the afternoon. Or, you know, is it on a Saturday or Sunday?
I think
I've been hearing, like, Saturday. I've been hearing conflicting things about what day they're actually holding it.
I thought Money in the Bank was on...
I thought it was a Sunday.
I thought it was a Sunday, but I've also heard that they're holding on a Saturday. I'm completely confused about what they're going to do. It would make sense for it to be on Sunday.
Yeah, because Monday's the 4th of July, so you could just have it on Sunday and it'd be fine. But
exactly.
It says July 2nd right now, so it's Saturday.
Okay.
That's so we'll see.
Wild day in... on the South Strip.
Yes. But Fightful Select did say they might move it to Sunday because UFC's on Saturday now.
Yeah, that would make a lot more sense because that UFC show is usually their biggest show of the year.
Yeah,
that's their Hall of Fame weekend. So,
mm-hmm.
But AEW did not do well on the rankings, and you can clearly point to the lack of a surprise this week because last week they were able to bust a million. With the return or the debut of Keith Lee and also the surprise of Jay White. But back to normal this week, it was a fine show, nothing special, but they didn't have anything to put forth to get those extra couple of folks. And it feels like something that, like, you know, we've been saying is AEW folks or folks that usually watch AEW that have been pulling out ratings, AEW versus NXT, or look at AEW in contrast to what Raw and SmackDown usually do. Now we're seeing, hey, shoe on the other foot, when you don't have anything to put forth on television and we're not giving anyone consistently good television, this is the fan output that you will get. And I kind of feel like, at least for right now, the well's running a little bit dry. Your champions are stale, especially your women's champion. The return of CM Punk has been very lukewarm. Jericho is Jericho. You love to see him, but has Jericho done anything special in a while? No. Your tag team division, eh. You have all these folks coming in, but what has Malakai Black done since he's been in AEW? What is Andrade? I think he's still going by Andrade. What is Andrade Idolo? What has he done truly since he's come over? It's good to have these folks. It's good to have Keith Lee. But like I said last week, what the fuck are you going to do with the Keith Lee? So that's kind of my issue with AEW right now. It's just getting very stale. And it's not a shock to see ratings drop off. And I don't think fans should be shocked to see ratings drop off. Because when you aren't giving folks anything special besides new, we're working on something. It's big. It's something wrestling hasn't seen before. All you become is a pitch man.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because... you know, I thought it was actually a pretty good Dynamite, so the number was a little surprising. I thought the CM Punk stuff was good, and I thought the Bryan match was good. I mean, the second half of it was...
The second half of the show was...
I think really, you know, all it shows is that, you know, a lot like the Raw and SmackDown ratings, there's a kind of number you can assume they'll always reach, and then, you know, a couple hundred thousand other people who may or may not tune in every week. I mean... You know, because in the demo or whatever, they were only behind the two NBA games. So, like, it's not bad, but, like, obviously you want the total number to be over a million. But I do kind of agree, like, they don't have a ton more surprises to bring in, which can be fine. I mean, you know, because I was thinking about it earlier, like, after Togan and Nash and Hall, it's not like WCW had a ton of big surprises. They just built on the guys that already came in.
Yeah,
so
exactly. I mean, they had the infusion of the cruiserweights eventually.
Yeah.
As time wore on and whatnot. But as far as like new arrivals into WCW, I don't think after Hall and Nash, probably would say, you know, I don't know how long Ted DiBiase was.
Yeah, and that's not even...
He got there. he was still profiled as some of a big deal. Six was there too, but he wasn't obviously on like a major level, but people knew who he was, obviously. I really wouldn't say WCW really brought anyone big in until the night that they had both Raven and Kurt Hennig show up on the same show in the lead up to Bash at the Beach, which I've been watching actually on Peacock, where Hennig was DDP's partner against, I think it was Scott Hall and Macho.
Yeah. So it's like, so
they went almost an entire calendar year without anyone, you know, these game changing people. Like,
Their surprises were more storyline based.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, the landscape was much different. And yeah, there's a lot of great unsigned talent out there now, because of roster attrition at WWE. But it's like, you know, you can, I don't blame them for picking up these people and giving them, you know, fair shots at a national TV deal. But like, at some point, you also have to realize, like, hey, you can't just bring in people week after week or whatever and not build off of anything. Everyone's got to find their place.
No, and I mean, I don't, like, at the same time, though, they kind of, like, they've built on CM Punk. He's in a real feud now.
I think Punk has been, of the three signings, he's obviously number two from the summer.
Yeah.
He's number two. I think Brian might be better than him, but also, like...
100% better than him.
It depends, like... It depends how you view it. Like, do you, like, Punk has been, like, you can say whatever you want about how, you know, he cuts a promo every week or whatever. Like, he's been a focal part of TV every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always been entrenched in some feuds. Ryan right now is doing his thing with Mox. But, like, and he obviously had the great matches with Hangman and the great match with Omega. So I think those two are running neck and neck. But obviously, you know, Cole is a distant third. They're trying with him now.
Yeah.
But the path that they took to get there was kind of skittish. Yeah. And it's obviously made it to a point where I don't think that there's any plausible scenario where he should be the one to be Hangman.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's going to be interesting. Like, I think they'll bounce back as, you know, they're...
too. I think, like I said, they have to do what WWE didn't, which is find a place for all these people and have to have them settle in. Because even while we say all of this, it's like, hey, you look at someone like Jade, even, like, she's barely getting any run either.
Yeah.
She's had her matches or whatever, but like it's still been skittish at best. She worked the match with AQA in AC. But after that, it was like, okay, you know, she did the match with Julia Hart on Rampage, but she only really appears on Rampage.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, they want to get people to watch. That's going to be an interesting one this week, too, because Rampage is at 7 Eastern. So
yeah, watch. They'll get a rise in viewership, and then it'll go right back down.
Before SmackDown instead of after SmackDown, which could be an interesting full-time slot.
They should make it to 7, 6 Central.
Yeah. I don't care. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's a concern if, like, the number stays there, just like it's a concern if the WWE number stays at 1.5 million or whatever regularly instead of fluctuating every couple weeks. But, you know, it's a one-week thing. I don't think it's a huge deal. I just think, kind of like we talked about, it's time to get to phase two and start building these people up a little more.
Yeah, because you also have to build up your next big round of big matches. It's like, a lot of them have been run through.
Yeah.
I don't think
give away for free on television.
Point to, especially in the tag team division. Because, like, everything in the tag team division has been done, but Santana and Ortiz still haven't had a run with the titles yet.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy to think about because they were one of their big deals when they first arrived on cable television. But, you know, I'd like to see them get, you know, more of a run with it. But the tag team division feels like it's been the same people for like two or three years now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. Couple things of note before we go back. I saw somewhere that Buddy Matthews, a former Buddy Murphy, could wind up being the third guy in Malakai Black's House of Black.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Booker T says that Roxy is signed with WWE. So eager to see her and Level Up pretty soon.
Yeah, she's very good.
Yeah.
Great for the people who said that WWE wasn't signing indie wrestlers anymore.
Right. Exactly. I forgot. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
That's a no-brainer signing for them. I am endorsing her because she, like Cora Jade, were fans of AJ Lee growing up. Don't look up what AJ is doing now, of course.
Wait, what?
Nevertheless, Roxy is awesome. I can't wait to watch her wrestle.
Okay. While I do that, yeah, course, she signed.
What I mean with AJ, of course, is running WOW with and being front and center with Tessa fucking Blanchard.
Oh, could she kick it with Tessa?
Well, she obviously, you know, they you know were on the press tour together. So
press tour for what?
For WOW.
Oh, because AJ's got some kind of partnership with WOW.
She's like the she's in one of the higher up positions for that, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay, then that would make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Nikita Lyons makes her debut on NXT this upcoming Tuesday. Shouts to that. Black History Month is we still have what? 10 more days. 9 more days. 9 or 10 more days left in Black History Month. So you can watch it. Go ahead. But just remember, we're still on Black History Month. And then also congratulations to Johnny Gargano and Candace. And the birth of Quill. They really named the baby Quill. So congratulations. Very much congratulations.
Absolutely.
What we got going on back in the day?
2006. Yeah, we get into it. Start with the music here. Number 5, I'm in Love with a Stripper by T-Pain. Down to 4, Be Without You by Mary J. Blige, which we talk about the Super Bowl halftime show. That was awesome.
That was fucking wonderful.
Great stuff. Yeah, they nailed it.
And truly is something like at least I've always been asking for, and so many other people have been asking for, because you know I remember when the Super Bowl halftime was really just a hodgepodge of names. Mm-hmm. The last one that was just the second to last one, the real last one was 2003, and don't nobody remember that shit.
Yeah.
But 2001 was actually kind of cool because they had Aerosmith, NSYNC, Britney. Feel like Mary J was there as well, and Nelly, and it was kind of like it was MTV produced, also like the 2004 one with when you end up having JT rip Janet's titty out, but it was so cool because it was truly, you know, you're getting to see the music that's being played today,
mm-hmm.
and even if you're not, even if the wildest person you got on the stage is Nelly in 2001. Was really fucking hot.
Oh yeah,
really before hot in here, really fucking hot. So it was just really dope to see us on that stage. And after 2004 happened, and after everything happened with Justin and Janet, they really wanted to scale back on the amount of Black music that you were going to see at the Super Bowl, which is really a shame because it was not Janet's fault at all that she truly just had a wardrobe malfunction and everything kind of fucked up and nobody backed her. But MTV got cut. MTV hasn't done a single Super Bowl halftime show since then because NFL wanted to get rid of the possibility for anything risque that would piss off the moms and all of the casuals who are tuning in for the first time, seeing all this sexuality on TV. Which ultimately ended up in no more hip hop, no more R&B. If you weren't at the status of Beyonce, where Beyonce is incredibly undeniable, or you weren't Black Eyed Peas, where Black Eyed Peas is acceptable to that kind of audience, you're not getting on stage. Big Boy, they had to fucking beg Maroon 5 to get Big Boy to do a halftime show in Atlanta. So to finally see all these different eras, Dre, Snoop, M, Mary get 2 songs. I'm so shocked they gave her No More Drama. Fantastic. Kendrick, to get the shock of 50, which, outstanding for you, sir. I saw the video, you climb your big ass up, your big gorilla ass up onto that whatever that you had to hold on so you could be upside down, so you could rap upside down to Super Bowl. At your big ass age, that is amazing. The music was really dope.
Yeah,
music was really dope.
Yeah, that was cool. I hope they you know, keep doing more current stuff, or, you know, even if it's not current stuff, stuff that was current in the past, you know, 20 years that didn't get a chance because they were having the Rolling Stones there instead.
Who would you want to see? I feel like that's a question that I feel like I need to ask people, because I've been going on Facebook a lot lately, which is always my downfall. And I'm immediately seeing people be like, they should do Shania Twain in a country, all country, which is like completely the antithesis of why we even did this. Because it's not like country has never been spotlighted on the Super Bowl halftime show. But matter of fact, Shania Twain has been part of a Super Bowl halftime show. Some other guy was like, yeah, they do an all metal one. No, we do not need an all Anthrax.
Yeah, no.
And Slipknot, like, no shade to Slipknot. I fuck with Slipknot, but we don't need that. But yeah, who would you want to see? I guess is the question that I need to be asking instead of, you know, anything else. Who would you want to see?
Yeah, because I mean, you think of like the biggest artists of the past 15 or 20 years, like, you know, Rihanna sticks out.
I think she's cool. Already like sold on not doing it.
Yeah.
She was there though. That's yeah, okay.
Yeah. You know, Taylor Swift, I don't necessarily think fits the vibe of a Super Bowl halftime show, but, you know, that could still be something.
She's enough of a star, too.
Yeah. You know, and you get a couple other people in there, and you just kind of do like they did, where they kind of had this assortment of people that had a relatively common theme and just go with it.
I feel like someone who could get run, I don't know how well it would play, but it feels like it would make a ton of sense someday, would be Drake.
Mm-hmm.
But
Drake should definitely get run.
Yeah, they obviously don't really have the space to pull off a Toronto Super Bowl, but that would obviously work.
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't obviously do that because it'd be too cold in Canada.
Yeah.
They don't have a domed stadium or what have you there, so it can't work in that perspective. But it feels like Drake is a no-brainer for a future performance.
Yeah.
Since they already did the weekend last year. And, you know, yeah. So I mean, you know, they've obviously been extending reach to popular artists. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if you do another one, and it's just a solo act, not a hodgepodge of folks like they did this year. If it's just the only solo act that can do a Super Bowl halftime show by himself, it's Kanye.
Yeah.
And like, it's so hard for me to say like, yeah, I'd be excited for that because no. But yeah. Like that show he did at the Coliseum a couple months back, it was just hit after hit after hit, and transitions were perfect. Of course, he only has like 12 minutes, something like that. But he's the only dude that can do it, and it would rock, and the crowd would be into it, and it would be an all-time great halftime show. After that, it's kind of hard. So like Taylor Swift, I don't listen to a lot of Taylor Swift, but I know Taylor Swift is popular enough that if you had like a Super Bowl in Dallas again or in Houston again, and you put her in there, then it would cater to that kind of crowd. Beyond, I'm trying to think of just like black artists. It's not like a whole bunch. Like you really got to start digging into the past. Jay should do one. But I think Jay is just trying to be on his executive type of bullshit. I would love to have a bad boy. If we did West Coast and we had a West Coast base for LA, I know we got Arizona in Vegas. It's going to be a minute till we go back out east. But that would be a dope one. Shit, New Orleans is on the docket 2025, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did a New Orleans base one, it's going to be really hard to do back that ass up at Super Bowl. It'd be incredibly hard to do that, but like it would fit, and it, you know, you can even go further and incorporate different jazz based artists down there in New Orleans. It'll be dope. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to 2006.
Yes, number three on the Billboard charts.
Still on the music. Okay, number three.
Grills. Number two, You're Beautiful by James Blunt, and staying at number one is Check on It. Your movies down from number one to number five is When a Stranger Calls. Debuting at number four is Curious George. Debuting at number three is Firewall. Debuting at number two is Pink Panther. And debuting at number one is Final Destination 3.
Don't care about Firewall, but Firewall reminded me. Did you guys catch the cable guy commercial?
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Great.
It was absolutely great. It made me want to switch to Verizon, even though my building is set up for Comcast.
It's good stuff. But yeah, get into Raw. February 13th, 2006 from Greensboro, North Carolina. Woo! Getting right to it here with Triple H against Big Show in the Road to WrestleMania tournament. Big Show's going after Triple H's hand, which was kind of cool because, you know, Triple H did that to Big Show when they were feuding. You got Big Show kicking out of a pedigree, which didn't expect to see. He also got busted open later. Big Show chokeslammed Triple H, and Triple H got his foot on the ropes, and then they ended up brawling outside and just kind of went to a double count out, and then Big Show speared Triple H through the barricade. So really good match. Enjoyed it quite a bit. But since it was a draw and it was a tournament, Todd Grisham asked Vince, you know, if the winner of Van Damme and Masters later goes right to WrestleMania. And Vince says no, because Triple H and Big Show didn't actually lose. They both won. So the winner of Chris Masters and Rob Van Dam get put in a triple threat match next week with Triple H and Big Show. So that should be fun. And then Shelton's mother comes in and asks for Shelton to have an Intercontinental title shot. And Vince says that if Shelton can beat Eugene tonight, he can have an Intercontinental title match next week against Ric Flair. Meanwhile, Mick Foley's getting ready. He's got his big night, a special referee. Edge and Lita come in and try and win him over. It doesn't really work. Mick says he's got to call it down the middle. Edge says that if Mick counts against him, it'll be the biggest mistake he's ever made.
Then we get Shelton Benjamin against Eugene. They are rebuilding Shelton. He basically squashed him. He's facing Ric Flair next week, the Intercontinental Championship. Ashley beat Tori in a match that definitely happened. And Candice announced that she's going to be on the cover of Playboy magazine because they are on the Candice Michelle train for a long while.
Yeah, she was in a Super Bowl commercial.
Two, I think.
Yes.
I feel like she was in more than two.
Might have been three. I think three is the mark.
I feel like three was the hill and four was the, all right, this is the last one. Yeah. I feel like it might have been four. But yeah, nah, they rode the train for a while.
Yeah, they rode the train for a while. I think even, did she get a Mania match?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's Candace and Tori. Right? No, it's Candace and Tori against Stacy and somebody.
Oh no, because they do a pillow fight.
Yeah, at WrestleMania
22 with Candice and Tori, but I don't remember. Did she get a match?
Or maybe Ashley is in it. Is it Ashley and Stacy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So never mind. So the Lumberjoe match in 2007 was Melina versus Ashley.
Yeah, that was Ashley Massaro.
Yeah. But 22 yeah, in 22 it was only Candice and Tori.
Only Candice and Tori, okay.
And yeah.
That's right. Stacey wasn't part of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Anyways, moving forward here, Vince and Sean talked in the ring for like a million hours. This went really long.
Yeah.
The Spirit Squad was involved. Basically, Vince is going to make sure that Shawn Michaels endures his own personal hell. That is the main bullet point of this presentation. If you're out there and you want to watch this Raw, please just skip this part.
Yeah, it was not good.
It's not good.
There's a lot on this Raw you can skip, low-key.
A whole lot.
It's true.
Also, a major announcement. Bret Hart is going in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Shock. Absolute shock. I mean, I'm pretty sure for folks that like kept up with the Dirt Sheets, you kept up with Dirt Sheets, Chris. You could tell us if you were shocked.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation where, like, I kind of knew what the reason was because it had, you know, been beaten into everyone's head by then, you know, what the screw job is.
They have the DVD.
And I think I found out through WWE Confidential, I want to say, and the DVD. So, yeah, it was pretty surprising. You didn't think this was ever going to actually happen, if they were ever going to go on good terms again, but everyone always comes back anyway. So this was one of the first big indications of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's exciting.
It is. Very exciting.
We move on to Chris Masters against Rob Van Dam in the Road to WrestleMania tournament. Van Dam gets the win, and next week he will face Triple H and Big Show. So, you know, We get another segment with
Trish. This was very uncomfortable.
With Trish's friend Jack. He goes into Trish's locker room. Mickey's in there in a blonde wig. Jack wants to know where Trish is, and then Mickey tries to seduce him and then says that it was him that started it. And then Trish gets mad at him, and the police get involved. It's not good.
It's not particularly good, and it's worse when you consider the angle that they just tried on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Like, don't do this stuff, please. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Nobody watching wrestling wants to see this stuff. I promise you. Do not go there. It's not good. I'm glad that they're, you know, they hopefully you've learned their lesson.
Yeah.
Because this stuff is bad. Anyways, we get John Cena versus Edge for the WWE title with special referee Mick Foley. Lita removed the turnbuckle late in the matchup. However, Foley caught her and ejected her. Cena went for the FU, but Edge countered into a DDT for two. Good near fall. Edge accidentally hit Foley and then Cena put Edge in the STFU, but Edge tapped out without him, you know, around. Lita came down, hit Cena with the belt. Cena kicked out at two. Edge then went for a crossbody off the top rope. However, Cena caught him in a feat of strength, hit him for the FU for the 1-2-3 to retain his title. And then after the match, Lita and Edge attacked Mick Foley. So it seems like we are pivoting towards Edge versus Mick Foley as a possible Mania program.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
Very intriguing.
And that does it for Raw. I think they stuck the landing on this show despite, you know, some rough patches.
Yeah, they absolutely did, because now we have the, you know, we know our future plans for Raw. We know that we're going to find a way to John Cena and Triple H. We know that Edge is going to continue on with this lingering disdain for Mick Foley. And if Mick Foley is involved, that means we're going to see something hardcore. So, yeah, no, Raw definitely was able to withstand the bad parts to, you know, what's the old saying? Don't nobody care about what happened in the first 48. All that matters is those last 12 minutes of the game, what you do at the end of the game that people are going to remember.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's what's happening.
And then also, like, the Rock quote before the match with Stone Cold at Mania 19, where Hollywood taught him that Act 1 and Act 2 doesn't matter. All that matters is Act 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there you go.
All right, so midweek, of course, that means we're talking sports. One of the main things going on in the world of sports right now in 2006, much like right now, was the Winter Olympics. Some things that happened over the week. It looks like on the first day, there was an upset where Michael Greiss of Germany won gold in the biathlon, despite missing one of his 20 shots.
Michael Greiss?
Huh. Yeah.
So he was the one that they won. That was bad.
Yeah,
fuck, that was bad.
Yeah. So they won gold. The defending champ in this event clinched silver. Let's see, moving forward here. The Pro Bowl happened on Sunday. The NFC won 23-17. Derek Brooks was named the game's MVP.
Also, back when they could hit in the Pro Bowl?
Yes. Back when they could hit in the Pro Bowl, correct. Also, I'm seeing not too much here on Saturday as far as noteworthy stuff. On Monday, I see that, USA won both the men's and women's halfpipe events in gold and silver. Looks like Shaun White won for the men. And let's see, Hannah Teeter won gold as well.
Hannah Teeter is a name that you only know if your grandparents subscribe to Sports Illustrated for Kids.
Yes. Yes, that is definitely a very deep cut of a knee. Let's see, Tuesday, nothing too much. Wednesday, alpine skiing, short track skiing, nope. UEFA Cup is going on, but nothing really because they're in the round of 32. And
she competed all the way up until Sochi in 2014, by the way.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes. Apart from that, let's see. Seth Westcott won the inaugural snowboard cross final of the USA on Thursday, I should say. In addition to that, a couple other things happened here, mostly just a lot of just regular stuff. So, and then also Sweden beat the U.S. in a shootout in ice hockey women's semifinal to advance through to the gold medal game against Canada. The U.S. had previously never been defeated in Olympic play by any team except for Canada, but Sweden wound up upsetting them, and then now the U.S. will play for the bronze medal against Finland.
And who's that really who would have been on that U.S. team?
As far like as the, yeah, I don't know actually who would have
Tony Amani, Mike Modano.
Oh, no, this would be for women's hockey.
Sorry, women's hockey. Yeah, Cammy's the only one I would have known, though.
Yeah. But, yeah, that looks to be it as far as sports. I don't think anything major happened in college basketball this week, so we can move forward here to SmackDown from Norfolk, Virginia, most likely at the Norfolk Scope. Great venue. So we started things off with Rey Mysterio against Sylvain. Rey got the win. He's focused on No Way Out and Randy Orton. Speaking of which, he came down and he said that he main evented WrestleMania, but Rey will not. Technically speaking, you know, he had a major match. He did not really main event, though. But anyways, Kurt Angle ran into Rey Mysterio backstage and gave him a pep talk and said that it would be an honor to face Rey at WrestleMania. Mark Henry then told Kurt that he might not even make it to WrestleMania. Very, very fair point. Orlando Jordan is in the ring. He's upset he doesn't have a U.S. title match and No Way Out. But we're all thankful for that. He's the greatest athlete in SmackDown history. There's not anyone who can beat him in the back. And then Boogeyman came out and beat him. And then we got a Cruiserweight Championship match between Gregory Helms and Sky Kumpati. Kid Cash was supposed to have this match. However, he had a family emergency, so they had to switch it. After a really fun match, Helms retained. He claimed that he was the best Cruiserweight in the company, but that pissed off the whole locker room and they came out and beat him up.
Yes, they did. And as he was getting looked at backstage, Teddy Long came in and basically said that since Helms said he's the best Cruiserweight, he has to face all the other ones at No Way Out. Well, you know. Paul Burchill tries to talk to Crystal, but Ken Kennedy comes up and says that Burchill looks stupid. No one's going to take him seriously as a pirate. And then he pulls a sword out and Ken Kennedy backs down. That's good stuff. And then we move on to Finlay and JBL against Benoit and Lashley with Booker and Charmel in commentary. JBL stomps on Benoit's hand a bunch on the stairs so he can't do the crossface. And then Booker hits Benoit in the back with a crutch and JBL hits the clothesline from hell for the victory. So kind of build towards both of those matches.
Yes.
Matt Hardy faces Simon Dean and hits the Twist of Fate and gets the victory and tells Melina that he will take her up on her offer. And he's going to find a partner and face Eminem on Sunday. And I imagine everyone thought his partner was going to be someone a lot different than it ended up being.
Well, who, like, Eminem?
No.
No, Matt's.
Matt's partner in No Way Out.
Oh, that's right.
Which, I mean, we'll get that match later in this year, but, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, so we have our main event of Eminem, Mark Henry against Kurt Angle and The Undertaker. Kurt took Eminem out and put Mercury in the ankle lock. Mark Henry was taken out by The Undertaker with Big Boot, and then Mercury tapped out. It's a fun match, fun main event. Angle ragged Undertaker after the match. Undertaker showed off by chokeslamming and then tombstoning Mark Henry.
Yeah, so Undertaker's a threat to Kurt Angle.
He is a threat to Kurt Angle, correct.
Speaking of Undertaker, he's going into the Hall of Fame this year.
He is going into the Hall of Fame this year, that's correct.
Not really a surprise, but...
Nah, I mean, technically his first ballot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's cool. I think we all think he's a little overrated, and especially since he's retired, he's been a lot harder to like. But, you know, it's cool.
It's one of the things where, all right, maybe it's not a complete comparison, but you could say that Taker is the Derek Jeter of WWE.
Yeah, you can.
Overrated in a sense, but you cannot tell the story of the World Wrestling Entertainment or professional wrestling without The Undertaker. He's the greatest gimmick, one of the most popular names. According to The Godfather, likes to get hoes. He's true. He's overrated in a sense. I don't think anybody is looking at The Undertaker and is looking at work rate. You know, it is what it is. But yeah, you can't tell a story of professional wrestling without him. You see, he mattered so much. And I think beyond that, and like a leadership role for the company when they needed it the most. So congrats to Taker. They're going to be doing that after SmackDown, which is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hall of Fame, I think, would start around like 9:20-ish Central Time. I would imagine it's going to be very short. It has to be a much shorter.
Yeah, like I think they said it was going to be like a 90-minute runtime.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you're going to do with that. It's going to be less people then.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which might be for the better.
They fit everybody in last year in a 90-minute show.
But it was taped.
It was. I mean, this one could be taped as well. I don't think they're going to be doing it live.
Okay.
So, anyways, another big sports thing that happened this weekend in 2006 is also happening this weekend in real life, too, is All-Star Weekend.
Yes.
And the NBA's All-Star Weekend in 2006 was in Houston. It was at the Toyota Center. Let's see here, moving on.
A real city instead of Cleveland?
Yes, a real city instead of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
The NBA is actively trying to make All-Star Weekend not a thing.
Yeah.
Three years in a row, you put that shit in fucking Cleveland, Indianapolis, or sorry, Cleveland, Salt Lake City, Indianapolis.
It's rough.
What are you trying to do? What are you doing?
What are you trying to do right there? Anyway, so the national anthems of the game were sung by Jan Arden of Canada and Destiny's Child, who sung the United States national anthem.
No, that's not. I mean, they're in Houston, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the halftime show was done by the combination of Carrie Underwood and John Legend.
Mm.
Not who I was expecting.
I feel like you got to switch that around. I feel like you got to have Carrie Underwood do the national anthem. Yeah. Destiny's Child and John Legend could do some heat in the halftime show. That's intriguing, David Stern. Yeah. What are you trying to do there? Is Carrie Underwood? No, that's she's from Tennessee, but maybe she's from Texas.
She's from Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Whatever. I'm not going to get into the Red River rivalry there, but.
Yep. So the T-Mobile Rookie Challenge was won by the sophomores, who defeated the rookies 106-96. Andre Iguodala, whose name came up frequently in the All-Star Weekend festivities, as I will get to in a bit, was named the MVP of the game with a game high of 30 points. Some notables here from the rookies I see: Andrew Bogut, Luther Head, Channing Frye, Danny Granger, Chris Paul, Nate Robinson, Charlie Villanueva, Deron Williams, and someone from the Pacers whose name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce.
What's his first name?
Sarunas, I think.
Sarunas? Fuck, what's his name?
Yasek.
I know who you're talking about.
Yasekovicius or something like that? I don't.
I know exactly who you're talking about. I just can't think of Yasekevicius.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember he was there.
And then the sophomores team was loaded. They had Luol Deng, TJ Ford, Ben Gordon, Devin Harris, Dwight Howard, Andre Iguodala, Nenad Krstić, Jameer Nelson, Andres Nocioni, Emeka Okafor.
No.
It's all guys that had like 10-year careers.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they had some gems here. Okay. So the rookies were coached by Sidney Lowe of the Detroit Pistons, and sophomores were coached by Del Harris of the Dallas Mavs. And the assistants were Elvin Hayes and Moses Malone, respectively.
Nice.
The three-point shootout was won by Dirk Nowitzki, who scored 18 points, beating both Gilbert Arenas and Ray Allen in the final round. Participants included Ray Allen, Gilbert Arenas, Rajah Bell, who did not participate, apparently, unfortunately, according to this due to a family illness, and Gilbert Arenas replaced him, Chauncey Billups, Dirk, Quentin Richardson, and Jason Terry. Nate Robinson won the Sprite Rising Stars Slam Dunk Contest, beating Andre Iguodala in a dunk-off after the first ever tie in a dunk contest. It was Nate, Iggy, Josh Smith, and Hakeem Warwick.
My God.
Competed in the dunk contest this year.
Yeah, this was the lean years of the dunk contest. Yes. Towards the back end of the lean years, though, because
yeah,
we're gonna get Dwight soon and Nate Robinson. It starts to get back up.
It does. And Dwayne Wade won the PlayStation Skills Challenge in an all-star cast featuring Wade, Chris Paul, Steve Nash, and LeBron James.
I remember being so hyped that Dwayne Wade beat LeBron James in the Skills Challenge. Oh, look at Dwayne Wade, got a Skills Challenge trophy. And then he went on and won an actual trophy, and I could just brag about that.
And the San Antonio team won the Shooting Stars competition with a time of 25.1 seconds. That team had Tony Parker, Kendra Wecker of the San Antonio Silver Stars, and Steve Kerr.
Not bad.
The other teams, one was from Houston, which featured T-Mac, Cheryl Swoops, and Clyde Drexler.
That's a good team.
The LA team featured Kobe, Lisa Leslie, and Magic.
My God.
That's a fantastic team. And the Phoenix team featured Sean Marion, Kelly Miller, and Dan Marley.
I feel like that was the year that it was Kobe, Leslie, and Magic, and they all just kept trying so fucking hard from half court and bricking. And everyone's just like, everyone's just like, how the hell do y'all three, none of y'all three of the greatest of all time, can't hit this half-time shot? But it was just cool to see all of them together, all LA legends in basketball. That now that you're bringing it back, it was a really fun all-star weekend.
Yes. And the East beat the West 122-120. Dwayne Wade had a game-winning layup with 16 seconds left. However, the MVP was LeBron James, who had 29 points and 6 rebounds and became the youngest player ever to win the All-Star Game MVP. Tracy McGrady led all players with a game-high 36 points.
T-Mac is...
The starters that year, for the record, for both sides in the East, was Allen Iverson, D-Wade, LeBron, Jermaine O'Neal, and Shaq. For the West, it was Steve Nash, Kobe, T-Mac, Tim Duncan, and, of course, the Alman. As far as other people who were named to the All-Star team, Arenas, Chauncey Billups, Vince Carter, Rip Hamilton, Chris Bosh, Paul Pierce, Rasheed Wallace, and Ben Wallace.
Pretty good.
It was Billups' first All-Star game appearance as well. Same with Rip Hamilton and Chris Bosh. The leader in as far as All-Star appearances out East, unsurprisingly, was Shaq. This was his 13th selection at the time. Mm-hmm. Allen Iverson had 7. Out West, you had Nash, Kobe, T-Mac, Duncan, and Yao Ming, like I said. As far as the reserves, Ray Allen making his first All-Star game appearance. Tony Parker, also Powell, made his first All-Star game appearance too. Elton Brand, KG, Sean Marion, and Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, damn.
And Jermaine O'Neal, unfortunately, was unable to participate due to injury. So Gilbert Arenas replaced him, and Vince Carter replaced O'Neal's reserve selection. Let's move on to No Way Out from the First Mariner Arena in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes.
Now Royal Farms.
Yes.
Was First Mariner.
So just like the Royal Rumble, we opened with the Cruiserweight match where Gregory Helms is defending against everybody. But it's kind of a free-for-all instead of just all of them against him. So he kind of hangs back for a while, lets everyone do their stuff. And then when it is time to strike, he goes in and pins Psychosis and retains his belt. And, you know, it seems like a bad idea to have him beat your entire division, but, you know, the plan is for him to have the title for a year anyway. So
being sneaky about
it.
The booking of this made sense.
Yeah.
That's all they need, because he's a chicken shit, so he's trying to be a chicken shit.
Yeah.
That's what they accomplished. They got from point A to point B.
Booker and Charmel are backstage telling Teddy Long that Booker can't wrestle tonight, and Teddy Long says that, you know, Booker can surrender the title then. They get on their knees and beg Teddy, and he tells them it's not appropriate for them to be on their knees, which is very funny. So that match is happening. And then we move to Crystal Marshall, going to do some interviewing, but Finley comes up and says he wants to fight with someone, so he picks on Crystal, carries her to the ring, but Bobby Lashley comes out for the save. But then JBL comes out. It's time for JBL against Lashley.
And JBL Lashley goes as you might expect. It was, you know, a physical matchup. After about 10 minutes and 56 seconds, JBL hit him with the clothesline from hell after he was whacked with the shillelagh by Finley. It's Lashley's first singles loss ever. I don't really have a problem with the ending. It was, you know, cheap to protect Lashley, but
I mean, what they did that was smart was not make a big deal about Lashley never losing.
Also true.
You know, that makes it easier when he finally loses.
It's just a sort of a quiet fan. I mean, he didn't really, up until this point, there was no real, like, there was no real point to boosting that up. This, who did he really beat?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Awesome. Like, it wasn't, this wasn't like what they did with Umaga, because Umaga started beating up, you know, he, I'm pretty sure Umaga beat up Ric Flair in his first night.
Yeah, which we're going to see in a couple months.
Yeah, exactly. So it's different when you compare. I know he was on the Survivor Series team and whatnot. They did all that fun stuff with him, but like, they weren't having him beat like these big, you know, big name people. So keeping Undefeated Streak quiet and not really having it be a big deal after that is a plus in their behalf. They took care of it before it became a burden.
Yeah.
And Undefeated Streaks usually become burdens after a while.
Yeah. And then, you know, after that clears, we go back out to the ring and Batista comes out. Not something a lot of people were expecting. Says that he's here for three reasons. He wants to see Angle against Undertaker, and he misses the fans, and his triceps is not torn anymore. He's rehabbing, and he's getting better every day, and he's coming back for his title sooner rather than later.
This is a surprise that I forgot about, actually.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, he...
It's a good talk for the live crowd.
Well, he lives in Washington, D.C.,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. So it's, you not, know. It's that far. But yeah, that's a good pop for the live crowd.
Yeah.
A nice little treat for them.
They show Kurt watching this on TV, and Randy Orton comes in and says that he'll be world champion when Batista gets back, so Kurt doesn't have to worry about it. Kurt says that he's champion now. He's not thinking about Orton because he's focused on The Undertaker.
Then we got our tag match between Eminem, Matt Hardy, and his mystery partner, and it's Tatanka.
Yeah, it's not Jeff.
No, it's not Jeff
Hardy. Not yet.
Not yet, but it's not him right now.
Yeah. It's also not a title match. So.
No, it was not a title match. This was nothing really that special.
No. Matt and Tatanka get the win. I mean, it's fine. It doesn't really need
to too much.
Yeah.
I remember. So then we get a video package for the United States title match between Booker T and Chris Benoit. Benoit made his entrance first. Booker came out, cut a promo, said he's not defending the U.S. title, says he's not healthy. Then Long says that Long comes out, Booker says he's going to forfeit, then Benoit calls him a coward, so things happen, and the match begins.
Yeah.
And I thought this was pretty solid.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, we've seen him wrestle so many times the past, you know, couple months, but it was good, you know. I mean, once Benoit finally got the crossface on, Booker tapped right away, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a feel-good moment, obviously, because of who it is, but... Exactly. You know, it's a good ending to the story, and I'm interested in seeing what Benoit does at WrestleMania with that title now.
Yes.
Because I genuinely don't remember, so.
Well, the person who he faces may or may not have pinned him on SmackDown, may or may not have gotten a win.
Oh, yeah.
The show, we just talked
about. That's right.
So they did some decent booking there. Backstage, you know, they did the whole locker room is happy Benoit won. Thing he came up to Ray, said he was going to do the same thing later. Then we get the Ray and Orton match.
Yes, also, we saw Chavo and Vicky also congratulate Benoit.
Yes,
so
correct.
They're in the building,
yes.
Yeah, so Ray against Orton,
and Ray and his wife and daughter are here too.
Yes, you know, this whole feud is kind of confusing.
I mean, I'm not sure. What do you mean by confusing? I mean, I thought, you know, the cheap ending was whatever. And, you know, this match was pretty good. I know you don't want your Rumble winner taking a pin or whatever, but like...
Well, yeah, it's just weird that, you know, Randy wins and then Ray ends up in the WrestleMania match anyway. Like, and I guess we'll see how we get there, but, like, it just kind of feels cheap.
It does, but, like, at the same time... I mean, you know, if the point is, you know, that people are doubting Ray or whatever, especially Orton, then, you know, it can work. I get where you're coming from, but I guess that they felt that the scene was so crowded, they were probably going to go with Orton if they didn't ultimately decide, hey, let's go with Ray. So they just took and used the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's fair.
And, you know, I mean, I get it. You ideally don't want that situation to happen, but you look at SmackDown, as we've seen, they've been able to build a pretty good show.
Yeah.
But there's not nearly enough credible people, I don't think, for someone of Orton's status to face one-on-one. Maybe they were trying to get, you know, a big-name legend or whatever to face him. I mean, since this obviously was still sort of his thing, but it never came to fruition.
Yeah.
So they felt, okay, let's just put them both in the world title program Angle's been around. Angle can work with either of them. It's fine.
Yeah, that's fair.
I get what you're saying,
though. Yeah.
You know, pinning the champ, like, or the number one contender, the Royal Rumble, whatever.
And then it's time for the main event.
Woo!
Kurt Angle against The Undertaker for the World Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, truly one of the best pay-per-view main events, I think, of probably the entire 2000s. I don't think it gets talked about nearly enough.
I think it's match of the year in 2006.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
very good.
Yeah.
You know, the ending where Kurt goes from the tombstone to the ankle lock is incredible.
So good.
It's good stuff all around. Undertaker, probably his best singles match, just from like a pure one-on-one perspective up till this point in his career.
Yeah, I tried thinking about this, Rob, because Rob posed this to me before. Do you think the same, Chris? Like, as far as no gimmicks, no stipulations, is this, up until this point, Undertaker's best one-on-one match?
No gimmicks, no stipulations, so it takes away the Shawn matches.
It does take away the Shawn matches, because I was thinking, it's like, and I guess if you want to count a special referee as a stipulation or whatever, it may rule out Bret Taker at SummerSlam 97, even though I think that match is obviously a gem.
That match is a gem, but I think the maybe
as far as other competition goes, I mean, I think the only thing that was like nearly as hyped as this match, or like that gives you like a feeling afterwards, would be probably the Austin match at SummerSlam 98, but even that is probably not as technically sound as this.
That's one of the ones I was going to say, either the Austin match, but I agree, it's not as technically sound. It's more of the you know, two big stars in the company,
yeah, exactly,
going at each other. The Triple H match kind of falls a little, yes, bit, but that's a stipulation, agree, right?
The no, one at Mania?
No, a false count anywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you might be right. That's you know, no stipulations, no gimmicks. It's probably just his best straightaway match. Yeah. And of course, it happens at Kurt Angle's best point. And like they hadn't really gotten together.
No,
because really long time since 2000, right?
Yeah, because
2001.
No, they had one match on SmackDown in like 2003 that was also very good.
And they had another one in the summer of 2002 leading up to that triple threat.
Yeah, but yeah, other than that.
I remember that because I think a video clip of it was shown in that hidden music video trailer or whatever they had in SmackDown Strike Your Mouth.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that they've definitely faced off in the first year that we did this podcast. And I know they probably did in 2003, like you said. But,
yeah, they probably faced off, but like,
and like nothing,
very intermittent.
Yeah,
exactly. It was intermittent, and even when Angle was like starting his like ascent to the top in 2000, they had a match at Survivor Series 2000 that year. Very forgettable.
Yeah,
they didn't really do too much with Angle and Taker over the years. So this felt like a big deal going in, and they clicked.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this was the start of Taker's like hybrid run, where you could see, like, you know, he's actually performing at like arguably an even higher big match level than he ever did before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's awesome. You know, go check it out. It's on YouTube if you just want to watch the match.
The full match is on YouTube. If you've never seen it, you absolutely should watch.
Yeah, just incredible stuff. And as of right now, our WrestleMania match is Kurt Angle against Randy Orton, which would have been fine too. I mean, fine. Like, yeah, you know, but yeah, No Way Out. It's fine. I mean, I think it sets the table nicely for WrestleMania.
Yeah. It's a fine show with a classic main event.
Yeah.
And I feel like most shows, especially this year, do not have classic main events.
No. It helps too that SmackDown's better than Raw right now.
It is.
So it makes the pay-per-views easier. But yeah, I think Kurt's probably the king of the ring.
Yeah, I'm not giving it to Randy for being a slimy
skin. Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Kurt. All right, let's get up out of here. Thank y'all for joining us. We got no more pay-per-views to talk about until WrestleMania. In current day and present day, because in current day, when we come back, we'll talk about Elimination Chamber and we'll look ahead to what we could be seeing in Dallas, Texas. I've got my tickets. I saw people trying to jip on WWE for doing the discounted Valentine's Day tickets. Those were a stain. I'm very thankful for all you folks who had not bought tickets, including me, for making them so desperate that they did half off. Appreciate your family. Got us some good seats for Mania. But yeah, it's going to be a fun time. We'll talk about what's going on there. We'll talk about 2006. We'll talk about AEW. We'll talk about if Cody signed anywhere. We'll be up to date on everything, man. So thank you guys for joining us. I'm at Cameron Santo. Rob's at RobinO'Neill31. Chris is at Chris M. Novak. At Barbara Sharnett on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/BarbaraStrayDigital. Patreon.com/BarbaraStrayDigital. Breaking news. I finally got my Mac back. We finally are starting to get everything re-updated. So once I get some presets and once I get some other stuff taken care of, you will have a top 25 coming up within the next week. Be on the lookout for that on the Patreon. $10 will get you everything. So we got the Hallis specials, new episodes of Summer Sessions. We appreciate all our subscribers. Rate and review us 5 stars wherever you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you guys so much for the support. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Ruthless Aggression. We'll talk Elimination Chamber when we come back next week.